My friend Ben Jerome pinged me and said, hey dude, get on this Clubhouse thing and check it out. It's great. It's amazing. It's really led to a lot of good connections. So I decided, hop on here and on the spot, on demand, record a podcast that same day and get it produced immediately and have it up and running within 48 hours on Spotify, on Apple, on Google to share with your friends and family. So that's what this is all about. You are the star. Welcome to the Haley Plumley Show, starring Haley Plumley. I'm Phil Brothers, and I'll be the host, but today, Haley, you are the star. Welcome.
Woohoo!
How you feeling, girl?
I'm feeling good. How you feeling?
I'm fabulous. This is your first podcast, yeah?
Yep.
And what is your experience and knowledge of podcasts as a general rule?
Very limited, to be honest. I dabble in them. I listen here and there, but
what's your fave podcast or what have you listened to that stands out to you?
Ben Shapiro, actually. I like his podcast. I think he is conservative, but I think he's open-minded about things, and I appreciate those qualities.
All right. Word up. Well, word to anyone who doesn't agree with Ben Shapiro, Haley is not as intense as him. So
he can be firm.
Don't turn off the podcast yet. She's not that unreasonable. So we were talking about a lot of things, and one of those things was your 1.5 dogs that you have. And I was like, how do you have 1.5 dog? Please elaborate.
1.5 dogs. So I own myself a little Chihuahua Yorkie. She's super ratty and she has huge ears, which kind of makes her cute. But overall, she's just an ugly dog. But yeah, you get the dog. You're obligated to love the dog for however many years. So she is my dog. And then we have about an 80, 90 pound lab that goes back and forth between my house and my children's father's house. Because it was, you know, the marital dog. So she goes back and forth with the kids.
Split custody on the dog.
That's right.
And she got her name from a series that you were fascinated with at the time. Please tell us about that.
Twilight. Team Edward.
Team Edward. And so what's better about Team Edward than whatever the opposite of that is? I'm not sure.
I don't know. It really is kind of a toss-up. But I think, ultimately in the book, I feel like Edward just loved the main character a little bit more. And his love for this woman,
gotcha.
You could just feel it in every aspect of his life. And I think from a woman's perspective, to be loved like that, just, I don't know, you know, we're drawn to it. We're like, oh, it makes us swoon.
I want to be loved.
I want to be loved like that. I want a man to swoon.
Gotcha.
Like that over me.
Got it. Okay.
But then you get them in real life and you're like, you're weird. Why are you so clingy?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, I want to be loved, and then when I am being loved like that, then I might get in a mood and push you away a little bit.
Yeah, I want to be loved like that when I'm in the mood for it, and you're just supposed to know when that is.
Don't even make me tell you about it. You just should know.
That's right.
Dear heavens, right. Help us all. I was having a conversation with a friend yesterday, actually, about this, because he was dating a girl that's younger than him quite a bit. She's never been married, and he was saying how the expectation is, well, you should just know when I want blank or when I'm feeling blank, and then just, you know, acquiesce accordingly. And we both kind of smiled at each other and knew that, yeah, okay. So what are your thoughts about that?
Because you're older and you know that's not really how it works in the long run.
Yeah, so how does it really work?
Communication, 1,000%. Everything has to be communicated.
If you want something, say something.
That's right. And be direct. Don't beat around the bush. Don't drop hints and think, oh, he should get what I'm saying. Nope. Just be direct.
Don't be passive aggressive.
That's right.
I dig that. So obviously you have some experience and our histories go back. So when I was going through my divorce around 2018, you had already experienced that and had deep levels of wisdom and insight. Do you remember that?
Oh, thank you. I do.
Yeah,
and I'm glad you feel that way, because sometimes I just feel like people would ask advice or go through what you're going through and they might come to me and say a few things and expect like a 1 or 2 sentence explanation. And I am not a 1 or 2 sentence explanation person. I don't think it does most topics justice. And so I think I always wondered if, oh my gosh, I think I just talked Phil's ears off for like an hour and a half. So anyways, I'm glad that you're now saying that it was insightful. So thanks.
You did indeed talk my ears off, but it was a good thing. I was welcoming it. And I was continuing asking questions. So we stayed up late, I think a couple nights. I don't know if it was in the same week or what, but nevertheless, within a couple weeks, because I was just very overwhelmed, not knowing what the heck to do. I remember pacing out front of my house and while we were talking for hours and hours about that. Yeah, I think I was barefoot in the street as well, by the way.
Oh, yeah, nice. Okay.
So there's a little picture painted. But in that, you know, again, you talked about one of the hardest things that you had to go through was your divorce and some of the aspects that you learned from that. Would you please share that with us?
So I feel like, you know, when you're in the moments, you know, you're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days. Some days you're like, oh, I got this. I'm doing fine. I'm fine. This is the right choice. I think that's the hardest thing. You go back and forth so much between this is the right choice, because a lot of times once you reach that level, typically between the two of you, well, if it wasn't a situation where one really wanted it and one didn't, but I think a lot of times by the time you get to the point where you've really said your goodbyes and you've gone your separate ways, I think both parties have at least wrapped their mind around some aspects of why this was the right decision. I mean, because if you never feel that way, I don't know how those people recover. But for most of us, I think we're like, okay, this is the right decision. But then you have so many days that you're like, I don't know if I made the right decision. But it's also kind of too late to go back.
Yeah.
I guess technically it's never too late, but it takes two.
Right.
I don't know. So I think that was like the hardest part. So it's like going through all those emotions and just being patient enough with yourself. That is the biggest thing. You have got to be patient with yourself.
And can you elaborate when you say be patient with yourself? What does that look like?
Well, because I don't think there's that many people that can get divorced and you don't ever beat yourself up. And, you know, especially if there's kids involved. I can't imagine not ever feeling like, or just feeling like you made the 100% right the choice and never doubting it. I mean, obviously there's situations, but in general, I think most of us, you wonder a lot. So like you might be going along. I mean, I do it honestly, even still, I've been separated, divorced, whatever, since 2013. And literally just the other day, like less than a week ago, my son made some comment to me about, I don't know, it was about the house and some stuff that was going on when we were in the heat of our separation, meaning like things were angry, the communication wasn't good. And I don't know what he said, but it just kind of hit me the wrong way. And I'm so far past everything now. And me and their dad were on great terms. You know, I don't cry about it anymore and carry it as heavy. But whatever he said just rubbed me the wrong way. And I just started bawling. Man. And I was just back to my old, I'm sorry for everything. Self. And he was like, where is this coming from? Because they haven't seen that in years. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, you're going to grow, but you're going to have so many days that you're like, did I make the right decision? Or have I ruined my children's lives? And it's even little things. Like if none of their friends' parents are separated, and then your kids are like, well, none of my friends' parents are separated, so I feel weird if we go here and do this, or if we go here and do that. I mean, it's all the way down to like the little details of things that you wouldn't have thought of.
Yeah.
Before you separated. Or, you know, if their parents want to have a cookout and like their whole friend group is invited and you're like the only single parent that shows up, and you just kind of feel out of place and you don't belong anywhere for years. You just kind of feel like, I don't belong anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're saying that part really stands out to me, because again, we were rolling with a very conservative religious group at the time when I was going through that. And that was the vast majority of our friends. And it was very frowned upon. And none of our friends that I can think of at that time were divorced. But if I thought harder, I might be able to think. But as a general rule, that was the case. And so when I would show up with my gaggle of children to these events and things, it felt terrible. I did not feel like I fit in. I felt like I was, I don't know, in a shameful existence, you know, and it was very difficult. So what advice would you give to someone who either is considering going through that, knowing that it probably is the best, but it's hard, or someone who has gone through that maybe is still working through that? What advice would you give?
My biggest advice is going to be find your tribe, find your group, find your people, find your support system. It's still going to be hard. You're still going to beat yourself up a lot. But just having people that you can call and say, today was a bad day and this is why. Mm-hmm. And they'll just listen to you and you can cry it out. You don't always need advice. Most of the time you don't need advice. You just need them to listen while you cry, while you rant, while you drop F-bombs, while you, whatever you need to do.
I needed lots of F-bombs, by the way.
And lots of F-bombs. And you just need them to be there to say, tomorrow's going to, and you just need to remember that tomorrow is going to be a new day. It is a brand new day. And no matter how, I mean, maybe trying to go back to a little bit what I was saying before, like, it's like, no matter where you're at, you feel like you don't belong. So if I went to church, I was like the only single person there. If I'm working too much, I feel like all my daughter's friends' parents might think, oh God, she works all the time and leaves her kids home alone. Or she, but it's like, no matter what you do, you're not winning. You feel constantly judged. And it's really just you. It's really because you're judging yourself. So don't.
Yeah.
Just say, you know what, this is my moment in time. It is a small chapter. And that's the thing too. Like, everything is a chapter. So maybe today sucks. Maybe this month sucks. But this whole next 3 or 4 years isn't going to suck. Or it's just a small moment in a bigger picture. And you just need to get up every day and do what you're doing. And you think about, where am I right now? Where do I want to be? And what do I need to make? What changes do I need to make? What do I need to do to get to my end goal? And forget the static and screw what everybody thinks. You just need to take the steps you need to take for whatever it is you are trying to accomplish. And block out everything else. That would probably be my advice. But you need to be patient with yourself.
I dig it. Patience with yourself. F-bomb homies. That was my thing, is I don't want to hang out with anybody that I can't comfortably say the F-word around, because I need to express myself in a way that I have never done before. Mm-hmm. At that point, I had never expressed myself that way. But I went through a difficult situation so much to the point where I had to express that in a way, because I'd never gone through something like that. So I need to talk like I never had. It's a weird thing to explain, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. You're going to make a lot of decisions during a time like that, that I feel like that you're going to look back and say, okay, maybe that wasn't, I really don't feel like that was representative of me and who I am and my morals and my, just in general, it was just not a decision I feel like I would have made in a normal circumstances. Right. But I do, it changes your mind for a minute. I do feel like most people going through a divorce probably lose their self a little bit, but you'll come back. You'll find yourself.
I definitely have my cray cray time. I had another friend who, for him, he called it his hoe time. I was like, okay, but it speaks to that. This is not how I typically would act or react, but I'm in such trauma, pain, frustration, anger, whatever it is, that I am acting out in a way to then, I've got to come back now and find myself, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And then it just being a chapter reminds me of, you were talking about some books that stood out to you and an author that stands out to you that's kind of inspired you. Would you please elaborate on that for us?
Yes, Jodi Picoult. I love her stuff. I've read all of her books. Probably her last two or three maybe haven't stuck with me as much as some of her earlier stuff. But at the end of the day, it's fiction books, but it's on heart-wrenching, real subjects. That could be you, that could be your family, that could be your kids. And I just love, and I think she brings light and awareness to a lot of things that people wouldn't maybe have otherwise considered or thought about. And I love her books. I've read every single one of them.
And I hadn't heard of her before, and you're like, say what?
Yes, please look her up and read. I mean, yeah, she's great.
So you told me about one of them, about the autistic kid. And if you want to elaborate on that one, cool. Or you mentioned Mercy. Or if you want to elaborate on another one, break down one of the plots or why it was touching to you.
Okay, so I wish I could remember the name of it. I've read all of her books and I get them intertwined sometimes. So I don't want to throw out titles.
No worries.
But one of her books was about, she's a defense attorney. And she often finds herself having to defend, like, sex offenders that have molested children.
Okay.
Right? So her job is high stress. And, but, you know, so anyway, something ends up happening to her child at a Catholic school. He gets kind of molested by a priest. Okay. And so she is worried because she realizes, because of her job, that if the children aren't old enough to testify, and a lot of times they're not, a lot of times the offender goes free, because that's a really hard thing to prove. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So she goes into the courtroom, long story short, on the day of this man's trial, the priest who was her son went to a private Catholic school. Anyway, she goes up and she kills him, like right there in the courtroom. So she loses her whole family over it. Because her husband was like, you can't take the law into your own hands. Do not do that, yada, yada. But she's torn because she knows that this man is about to walk free. And in her mind, he molested her son.
Right.
You know, so it's like, so if you were that woman and that was your child, where would you draw the line?
Or how do you even know if you're not in that situation? You can always surmise, right? But do we really know? But it still puts you in her shoes of, wow, you're faced with a tough decision, right?
It's a damn tough decision because she's thinking this man's about to walk free.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, in the end of the book, she lost her family because her husband left her over it. I'm pretty sure she went to jail because what really ended up happening is like his twin brother had come into town at some point, and the twin brother is who molested her son. Wow. So like, yes, yeah, so really she killed the wrong man, which is precisely why you shouldn't take justice into your own hands.
Wow.
But as a mother, not knowing that fact, like, oh, what would you have done?
Right.
I don't know.
Wow. That makes it, the twist at the end. So I feel like you should make that movie. You should make it and star in that movie.
I'm about starring in that movie.
Yeah, and it would be heart-wrenching. I would go see it.
So I have like one more that I really would like to touch.
Break it out.
Because this one's phenomenal, and it really will speak to the times that we're living in right now.
Okay.
This one is about, and this really brought awareness to me, and I'll tell you what I love about her books. Her books make me research. They make me stop and look things up. And just, they've opened my eyes to things that I really would never have thought to put any effort into.
Okay.
So to me, I am, for anybody listening, I'm just a little white girl from North Carolina. I don't feel like I'm racist. I don't feel like most people are racist. Are there bad attitudes towards it all out there? Of course there are some, but I don't think the majority of us are.
Okay.
So I did not realize that KKK is still a thing. I did not realize how big these underground groups of highly racist people are. And apparently these things are still huge, whether we see them in our everyday lives or not.
Okay.
But she wrote a book about a couple that had a baby and they go to the hospital. And there's one black nurse on staff. And they say to the hospital, they put it in writing, they do not want this black nurse to touch their baby.
Okay.
Okay. And the guy that's the book about a couple, like he is reformed, like in real life, it was based on his life. Like he is now a counselor for this mentality of thinking to get people to not think like that. Okay. But he used to be this KKK skinhead guy. So they have a baby. They say they don't want the black nurse to touch the baby. Okay. So one night there was a code in some other room. So all the nurses had to run to this other room. Well, in the meantime, the baby started going into cardiac arrest because it was actually born with a heart defect.
Yep.
And the black nurse was the only one there. So based on hospital rules, she couldn't touch the baby.
Right.
But based on her oath that she took to be a nurse, she needed to save that baby.
A conundrum.
So she administered medical attention to the baby. Well, the couple sued the hospital.
Okay.
The book is about this. They're trying to make a movie out of it. I think they were going to do, you would love the lady that's going to play the main character. But anyways, it really just raised awareness on kind of like racial differences and maybe things that are still prevalent that maybe as an average person, you don't even realize.
Right.
Anyways, it was just a very, very touching story. It was really, really good.
That does sound good. And really challenging in the whole, okay, what right or wrong? Like, which one do you follow? Like saving a life. That is a bigger principle than saving the hospital's whatever principle, you know, what policies. So again, you ask the parents in the moment, which obviously she didn't have the time or availability to, you know, interview them. Well, would you like, you know, me to save your child's life or would you like me to stick to the policy? Because you don't have much time. You know, how would you imagine them answering that? You know, of course, again, in logic, I would say, yeah, save my baby in the moment, right?
Right.
But they are still pressing charges and suing, which is outlandish in my mind.
Yeah.
But nevertheless.
Well, to be fair, I didn't want to spoil the book. The baby didn't live.
Dun,
so
dun, dun.
They tried to act like, you know, it was because she was black and she didn't do her medical care right and blah, blah, blah. But ultimately she did. And anyways, years down the road, the relationship was kindled properly and stuff. But it was just about bringing light and awareness to that topic, and I thought it was a really good book.
Well, that does sound interesting, and I think you should also co-star in that one, and I look forward to seeing that. And then when we go see that movie, then maybe we could have some J&S pizza in the meantime. What do you think?
Yes, we can have some J&S pizza.
I hear that's good stuff there in the old North Carolina. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the big, greasy New York fold them in half slices of pizza.
Fold them in half. What do you mean when you say fold them in half?
You know, come on, Phil. You've had pizza before where it's a really big slice and it's greasy and the cheese is everywhere. So you just fold the pizza in half and you eat it like that.
That way it's just not like slopping everywhere and just like hard to control like an elephant's ear, but then you can manage it easier, like a taco almost.
Yes.
Okay, I'm following.
Precisely.
And
it's a pizza taco.
Okay, yep, I can get down with that. And if you're not going to be eating pizza as far as fave foods, then what else you got out there on the list?
I don't know. I do like steak.
Gotcha. What about watermelon?
Oh my God, I love watermelon. It's my favorite. just cut it in half and give me a fork. Like, I don't have to share it with anybody else. I'll just eat it right out of the rind all by itself.
Yeah. Get down. Half of a watermelon you weren't allowed to use in the utensil and you could only use, like, just your face digging in. Would you eat that watermelon?
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. It probably tastes better.
Get into it.
Yeah. You know that's what you're supposed to do to your kids on their birthday, right? Like the birthday kid is supposed to eat their cupcake with their hands behind their back. That's the tradition.
And when you say the tradition, I'm imagining your family only because I've never heard of such a thing.
Well, it needs to be your tradition too, sir.
Okay.
Now it's the tradition for both of us. You need to start that
right away. I'll submit it before the panel and we'll see how everyone rules on that. But I imagine that's how it goes down in your family. So what's the origin of that? And what are some funny experiences from that?
You know, just fun times. But I will say, you need to make sure the other kids know that out of funniness, don't think that it's going to be funny if you hit that kid's head in the back of the head.
Yeah.
And like, because you think that you're just going to like, you imagine you're going to pound their face into that cupcake and they're going to get icing everywhere. But what you're really going to do is pop their lip on the table and it's going to bust it. Because that's how this all started at a birthday party when I was young.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I don't know why it made me want to start doing it. But that's how we eat our cupcakes now. But I make sure to tell the other child, do not hit the back of this child's head because that's going to hurt them.
When was this very specific pop the lip on the table story?
I remember it. It was actually at the fire department outside of Fuquay. It was at a birthday party for, I want to say it was Lisa and Monica Dean.
Okay.
The twins. Yeah. Do you remember them?
I
you
might do.
Not. Since you, oh, do you? Okay, great. So I think it was a party. If it wasn't their party, they were there.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. It was a small town. You know, we all knew each other.
Yeah.
But we were at this little birthday party for whoever we were there for. And a couple of us were eating cake without hands. And someone thought it'd be funny to kind of like smack the back of my head. And it wasn't funny to me.
Those sons of biscuits.
That's right.
Not cool.
Little schnitz.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. So you let it out of the bag. I didn't fully cover our history. So in sixth grade, we were in the same... Well, actually, we were in the same grade for like, I don't know what, third through sixth, I think, was when we were in North Carolina. But, we have that elementary school history.
Yeah.
In the good old Lillington.
Riding bikes in big old town of Lillington.
Yep. You just run the whole town. You can just go wherever you want. No intervention, no supervision. Ride a bike, walk around.
That's right.
I don't know if that's the same safety level or comfort, but I do remember that being amazing. Is that the same? Or would you be like, all right, kids, just run around the town, or is it a little bit more constrained?
I don't know. You know, I don't live there anymore. But there's a lot of things have changed, and so I imagine just the world in general, people probably maybe don't let their kids do that as much. But I don't know. The back roads where I lived, and I think you live back there too, I'm pretty sure they do. Because it was almost like, even though we weren't in a subdivision, it was like a community on those back streets, I feel like. So I'm sure they still jump on their bikes and run the community. There's no way they don't.
Yeah.
They should.
The good old days. And I remember some of the best things there at Lillington was the baseball park. You go there, like, you know, I don't know, during the weeknights for the summer and just run amok, play ball, and just run around with everybody.
The 4th of July celebration was huge. It was fantastic. I'm going this year, actually, for the first time in a long time, so I'm kind of excited.
Which is what, in a few days or tomorrow or what?
Yeah, another doing it Sunday, I think. Okay. Sunday night.
All right. Well, we look forward to hearing you repeat back some of the antics there. So in funny story realm, you have funny story about your daughter, and go ahead and lay that out for us.
Oh, good Lord. I always have funny stories about her. Pick one. So what do is a couple months ago, she's real bad for leaving her keys in her car when she's at work.
Okay.
And so I'm telling her all the time, like, you can't leave your keys in your car. You can't leave your keys in your car. So one day I'm driving through the town she works in, and I thought, let me just swing by and see if her keys are in her car. Well, they were, and it cranked up like a charm. So I moved her car. It was in this big, their parking lot for where she works is this big old parking lot. So it's getting later at night. There's not that many cars out there, but there was like a big Tahoe sitting clear across the other side of the parking lot, and she was driving this little teeny Prius. So I moved it. I moved the Prius behind the Tahoe.
Oh, shoot.
And then she was about to get off work, and I went and sat in like a dark corner under some trees and just watched. So she comes out of work, and it's all these little 15, 16-year-olds. They've got their little coffees, and they're giggling. They're chit-chatting. And they're walking in the general vicinity of her car, and she started noticing her car wasn't there. And I noticed she looked up, and she looked kind of funny, but then she just kept talking to her friends, but she was, like, kind of discreetly looking around. You know, so I know in her mind she was thinking, where's my car? Where's my car?
Yeah.
So then I see her pick up her phone. She's calling her dad. Well, it's technically his car.
Okay.
So I'm texting him. I'm texting him as hard as I can, and I'm saying, don't panic, don't panic. I moved your car. It's not stolen. Because I know she's calling him to tell him.
Right.
I left my keys
and he's
going to
crap a brick if you don't tell him.
That's right.
Okay.
So anyways, so I pull up to her, and I roll my windows down, and I was like, hey. I was like, I was just passing through. I guess I'll see you at the house. And her face is just white. And she's like, Mom. She's like, my car's not here. And I was like, oh, my God. Why would your car not be here, Lexi? And then I was like, wait, did you leave your keys in it? And oh my gosh, her face was priceless. I wish I could just show people her, and her face just sunk. And she was like, yeah, I did. She was like, and my wallet was in there too. And at this point, I'm feeling really good. Because now she thinks her car's been stolen and her wallet with all this little money that she worked so hard to make is all in the car.
And you're feeling really good. So the sadistic mom does not care. You want to teach them lessons deeply, don't you?
Yes.
Okay.
And so I said, well, and I let her sit there for a minute and ponder it. And I was like, I'm going to go ahead and tell you, your car is in this parking lot. And she's looking around. She's like, where? I don't see it because I hid it behind the Tahoe.
Right.
And I was like, your car's in this parking lot. I'm going to go on home now. You can find your car, and I'll see you when you get home. And just when I drove away, how nice it felt when I'm looking through my... First of all, her friends busted out laughing. And they were like, that is great. That is great.
Yo, mama got you.
They were laughing so hard. They were like, that is epic. She said they still give her a hard time about it.
That's great.
as I'm driving away, and I'm looking in my rearview mirror just to see all of her little friends kind of go separate ways because they're all trying to help her find her car. It was great. But I tell you, she came in from work that night, and the first thing she said, she walked right up to me and said, I feel like I want to be mad at you, but I'm not. And in fact, thank you for teaching me that lesson, Mom. I needed you to do that to me.
Oh, which I thought was pretty cool. Yeah, that's like a heartwarming episode of Saved by the Bell when the lesson is learned and the music is played at the end.
Yeah, that was a pretty big math thing for a 16-year-old to admit.
Yes.
That, you know, I got punked, I deserved it, and it was a good lesson. It's pretty big.
That is. That's very humble and... Yeah, it's reflecting of her. So now she hopefully won't do that, and maybe just not as often. Has she done it since, do you think, leaving the keys in?
Now I tried to trick her again the other day, but I got in her car and it wasn't locked, but there was no keys in there. So she's good. She's done better.
Looking after it. Well done.
Yeah, she's learning.
Learning the lessons from the mama. Well done. So, all right. Well, I appreciate you sharing that story and all of the other wonderful stories. I am super glad we got to do this recording. It showed up. We showed up in the, the Monday get up, Friday get down room. And then I texted you and said, hey, you ready to record your podcast? You said yes. And we just freaking jumped in and did this. So, what are your thoughts about that whole process there?
Well, it's been fun, actually. I would never have done this. It's awkward for me. I don't like being in the limelight. I don't like I feel looked at, which is definitely out of my comfort zone. But I don't know. It's good for me. I'm trying to grow. I'm just doing things. So this was good for me. I needed it.
Well, great job. You should be proud of yourself. And then one of the funniest answers of this was, you know, are you married or to have a significant other? And you said, I'm significant enough.
That's right. I am all the significant I need.
And I dig that. Okay, so our final question here. If you had the ability to put a message out on everybody's cell phone, say a billion people, you're going to be their background for a week. What is that important message you think that we need to hear as a society?
I feel like I could come up with something super fruitful, but not on the spot.
Just go, top of your head. Go for it.
Perspective. It's probably my favorite word, and I think it affects everything.
Mm-hmm. Would you elaborate
everything,
a little?
So. Just take the things throughout your day and everything. Just think to yourself, like, put a positive perspective on it, or try to think of things like not always from your own point of view. Nice. I don't think things happen. I think everything happens absolutely for a reason. Everything. Every teeny tiny thing that happens throughout your day has a purpose for that day and for your bigger picture. And so no matter how draining it is, no matter how bummy it seems, like, at the end of the day, there's a reason that happened. So just roll with it. Roll with it and say, okay, so that didn't work out. Plan B. Just change gears. But don't let it get you down, and do not let it determine the rest of your day.
Yeah. I dig it. So the perspective from the white girl from North Carolina is what the one that we gleaned today, and everybody has a different perspective and experience. I appreciate you sharing yours with us today. What else do you want to put out in the universe before we get going?
That's it. That's all I got.
Okay. Well, then let's close this down. Tell your mama, tell your kids, tell your homies too, that Haley, you are the star, and this show is for you.